You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Michael.
You know, I'm a guitar here real quick. I was thinking of...
I noticed.
I was trying to figure out how to play the theme song. It's been so long. So yeah. I was like, it's my point of view. Come on. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Ooh-hoo. Oh, yeah. Kind of like that new one. Maybe we should record that. Me and Ryan singing it. Singing the theme song.
Yeah.
I think people would be upset.
I'm always weirded out by it because you learned your guitar differently. So I'm always like, what the hell chord is that? But you just learned backwards.
Well, it makes sense because I am kind of backwards. If you meet me or obviously you've been listening, I'm a little backwards. I play upside down guitar. That's how I learned. I do kind of everything ass backwards, probably life in general.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's funny about that song. You know, some people are like, man, that song, I don't like that song. And then other people are like, you know, some fans or listeners, they play the song and it's kind of a staple, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, do we keep it? Do we do a new song? What do you guys think? You could write in, say, get rid of that shit or whatever. Good. I like that you're wearing the inside of you mask. I don't tell you.
Still?
Do you like it? Is it comfortable? You can be honest.
Oh, it's nice. I mean, I'd rather not wear a mask, but
sure.
This is the world we live in. So
it is.
But I mean, as far as masks go, it's great.
Great. I like hearing that.
Merch.
Yeah, merch. It's all in the merch store. And new mugs. I just had to order new mugs. The ones sold out. So I said, hey, I'll autograph the mug, blah, blah, blah. So those sold out. So, you know, we ordered more and there's a bunch of other new stuff on the Inside of You store. But, dude, did you feel the earthquake?
Fucking yes.
What did you do when you... So wherever you are in the country, if you're not in LA or the area that I'm in, you didn't experience this. But if you did, I've had like experiences with earthquakes. I remember one in 99 or 2001, maybe whenever it was in California, my friend Dave was crashed and I was running a little place in Studio City. And I remember when it really rattled and he just always tells the story. All he heard was there's nothing, silence after. And then he hears Dave. He's like, yeah, dude. And I'm like, what do we do? I don't know, dude. So we got under the door frame. I think that's kind of what you're supposed to do, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, because I lived here during the 94 one, Northridge, and we were living in Sherman Oaks.
Horrifying.
Yeah. We hid under a table in the hall. That's what I remember doing.
Well, so this one, the other night, how did you react?
Well, it sounded like a meteor. I don't know. I was just startled awake. And then I have this old TV that's on my dresser. And like it's kind of big, so like that's like the first thing to topple over. And Amanda was sleeping next to me, so like half asleep, I went and just sort of like as like a shield over her. I was like, but I was also like not awake enough to realize like anything that was happening. So I was like, but in my subconscious, I was trying to be a hero. But then I really wanted to go back to sleep.
Yeah. Well, my friend Xander, we were watching a horror movie via Zoom last night, and he was like, Carrie and I, his wife, love them both. It was the weirdest thing because I don't know what it's called, but I think he had a name for it. They got up, they jolted up, and they were both nauseous and like almost throwing up. And they were like, wow, I didn't have that. But what I did was I deep sleep, and I'm not lucky enough to have someone sleeping next to me. You know, in fact, my dog doesn't even sleep next to me anymore. Either of them, I guess, you know, do you blame them?
Yeah.
But I was out of a deep sleep, just whole, and it was like that sound. And I remember I got to the door frame. First, I ran to the dog, and Blanche was like, oh my God. You know, I was like, all right, just stay there. I got to the door frame, and I remember I got that voice back from 2001. I was like, Lord, I'm in your hands now. I don't have any control here. I make it quick. You know, it was terrifying. And you got to think, you know, you're Californian, you live in California now. I mean, I grew up in Indiana, but. And we always have tornadoes. I remember tornadoes in Indiana, seeing two funnel clouds. Is that what we call them, funnel clouds?
Tornadoes freak me out more than earthquakes.
Oh, my God. Seeing these things in the backyard about, I don't know, half a mile away, I was like, oh, my gosh.
I have no idea how you guys deal with that.
And I've had a lot of friends. But I had a friend who lost his dad to it, the people's houses. I mean, you hear all that stuff. But this one, you got to think that the big California one's coming. You got to think, you know, it's due. You hope it's not.
Yeah.
But you know there's going to be one. You know there's going to be another one, a big one.
Yeah, that's what we keep being told. And
yeah, and then there was a brush fire. That day there was a brush fire. Helicopters dropping right near where I live. And I'm like, my buddy Harlan, you know, Dumb and Dumber, the cop that picks, you know, he's like, you guys drinking on some of Grandpa's cough medicine, are you? he leaves a voice memo. He goes, Hey, bud, I don't know if you noticed, but the choppers are around. They're dropping water and whatever shit they drop, and it's kind of right near you. So, look, I don't know what's going to happen, but you might want to grab your laptop or your belongings. And I'm like, what is going on? Earthquake this morning, brush fire, COVID, all the shit that's going on in the world. And I'm thinking, I mean, is it now? I guess it's normal to think, is this end of days? You start to think that, but you gotta, we can't think like that. You can't live in the future.
No.
I talk about that. You just gotta go, hey, what do you got? What do you got? Throw it at me and I'm going to do the best I can to deal with it. And yeah, you hope that it just, things get better. And look, I mean, look, that's life. You know, you have these highs, you have these lows, you have these, but the things you can't control are the toughest, right? The things mm-hmm. that, you know, you can't control death. You can't control, earthquakes or tornadoes or so, you know, and then I just found out a friend's dad died. My other friend, close friend, his dad got COVID, went to the hospital, had pneumonia. He's doing better now. Also a big shout out to Mr. Lally, Tom Lally Sr. I love you, Mr. Lally. You're a fantastic human being and I'm wishing you the best and thinking of you. He knows that cause I text him constantly. Hey, it's Rosenbaum. All right, Mike. You know, it's so cliche and people do that when something tragic happens or, but it's pretty easy to just text somebody or call somebody and just say, I want you to know I love you. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's it. It's good for everyone. I immediately did that with my siblings, who I don't talk to a ton. And my brother, who I hadn't talked to in a while, said, you know, text me something really nice. And it was nice. It was almost like self-deprecating, sort of like, hey, I know I've sort of been a little bit of a fuck up, whatever, my older brother. And he said something that was kind of profound. And I'm not going to say it probably as profoundly as he texted it to me, but it was nice. So yeah, look, also a shout out before we get into our guest, and this is a fantastic guest. I know I say that, but also you guys know that you heard it a million times, whatever you could do to support the podcast, you're doing it by listening. But if you're here for this guest only, subscribe, listen, watch on YouTube. It's all free to do that. And if you want to join Patreon, which by the way, my patrons are the reason why we're doing this show, because you know, supporting the podcast in other ways. And, you know, there's a bunch of great stuff that I give, like certain tiers get questions with me and inside of me. And I created a character that talks to me like a female version of me, an Australian, if that's what you want to call it.
Sure.
His accent goes in and out, but he asks me questions from the patrons mm-hmm. in those. And I create these. So I'm home alone, 'cause you're not here a lot. And I create these characters that talk to me and ask me questions. So that's all part of that. And then some tiers get to ask the guest questions called shit talking. So I go, this is from my patron. This is so-and-so. We do Zooms. There's a bunch of shit. It's great. Started this community. There's a huge amount of friendships that have been created. So Patreon, inside of you, Patreon, if you haven't heard of it, check it out. I think you'll love it. It supports the podcast. And just you know, text your friends, email your friends to listen or watch or and subscribe and support the podcast. At Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and at Inside of You Pod on Twitter. So I want to thank them. And a big shout out. We did a stage at Rob Danson and I. We're trying to make a new album. So we do these stage at these live performances on stage it. And tons of people come and the top bidder or whatever, two lovely ladies, Vicky Garcia and Lisa Jordan. I want to give you my love right now. Vicky Garcia, Lisa Jordan, top bidders. Thank you so much. And thanks for supporting our music and want to make an album. And I will say this. If it wasn't for this podcast, which I almost quit many times in the beginning, we weren't getting anybody to listen. And I was like, what am I doing? I mean, this is just a blow to the ego. No one gives a shit. And then I just stuck with it. And I'm so glad I did because and the music I really started 2 years ago. And, you know, the Patreon I started 6 months ago, but if I wasn't doing these things, what would I be doing now? I wouldn't be looking at this Inside of You pillow that, Kristen and, Leah made for me with all the names of the guests and these pillows. And, but I wouldn't be doing all, you know, so it's all the love and support and, you know, when I talk about it, I mean, there's some podcasts that are huge, you know, that just get in, and then there's some podcasts there. But I think everybody nowadays, all these new celebrities since the COVID, they're starting podcasts. So they're all podcasters. So there's a lot to listen to. And I'm like, you know, to be able to come back and listen to me and support me in this podcast and us, Ryan mm-hmm. And Bryce, it's really, it's amazing. And I'm so grateful and I'm glad I stuck with it. And it's growing. and it makes me happy. So again, thank you, Ryan. I've said it before. I'll say it again.
You're welcome. I'm glad you stuck with it.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, what the fuck would I be doing? This guest is someone I've known for a while. Also, you should know he's the only one that you see in person that I've been doing, because I've done all Zooms. Now, it was in person because we did it months ago, because we didn't think...
We did a bunch in a row at the end of January, beginning of February, and we just sort of been... And then when COVID hit, we decided to do some Zooms. And we sort of held on to this one for a while.
We held on. We're like, you know, this could go on for a long time, longer than we anticipated. So, yeah. So this is... you'll see him, but he's not wearing a mask because this is way before COVID. So... he's a great guy, and I didn't know him that well, other than, you know, just kind of really friendly. But man, he opens up so much about his biological father and Kurt Russell, who raised him, and Goldie. And it was, you know, I didn't expect this interview to be more than 50 minutes, and it went longer because I was so interested in him, and he was so open and fun, and I loved talking to him. I think you can hear it in my voice while we're talking as it goes on. So Oliver Hudson, he's been in a lot of stuff. You know, his sister Kate, they have a podcast, and let's just get into it. I think you're going to really dig this. Let's get inside of Oliver Hudson. It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
How do we know each other? I'm pretty sure that I went out with your wife.
Oh, yeah.
A long, long time ago. And I really liked her, and she dumped me, and then she dated someone else, and then met you, and then you got married.
Yeah.
That was it.
No, when
that's it.
I left the house. She was at the house. I was like, I'm going to talk about Rosenbaum and your whole relationship.
Did you say that to her?
Yeah, and she goes, don't bring it up.
I mean, we really didn't have a relationship.
No, I know. You dated for a minute.
I was too, you know what it was? It was one of the first times in my life, not the first, I've had a lot of these moments where I am just intimidated by a woman. She was so, I felt she was like, nobody's perfect,
mm-hmm.
but I thought she was beautiful and sweet and smart and cool. And mm-hmm. I was like, don't fuck the, and I just, and that's why I think I'm single. That's why I think a lot of my confidence is not because of Aaron.
No, I know. I know what you mean. Yeah, no, she's amazing. You missed out. You blew it. I mean, you really
I didn't
did.
Blow it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what happened, but I'm happy that she came into my world, because that woman is.
Did you know right away?
Near perfect.
Did you know right away?
Yeah. Well, you know how it is, man. Like, we met actually.
Don't say
acting,
WB
in an acting class. Oh. It's just almost worse, you know. But I had a girlfriend. I was dating Vanessa Shaw. Remember Vanessa Shaw?
No.
She was an actress around town from. And she actually lived right up here. And we were friends for a minute.
Yeah.
And then she dated Simon Rex for about 6 months.
That's what happened right after me. Simon started dating
Yes,
her.
It was
and
Simon.
I was like, of course. He's way better looking. He's got a great body. He's got that Italian look on his face.
Yeah, he's got that.
Just
like,
a good looking guy.
He has a good
Italian look.
Look
on his face. God damn it.
He looks American, but at the time he had an Italian look on his face.
Such a good looking guy.
Yeah, he's
So she dated him for 6 months.
She dated him for 6 months, and then we got together. But like anything else, when we first got together, of course she was great. I didn't know her, but she was just sexy as shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to, you know, see her naked. I mean, that's really what it was.
Let's be honest.
No. And then we made it happen, and that was that. I mean,
and it was good.
I was concerned at first
that you weren't good.
Yeah,
you were quick.
Yeah,
who wouldn't be quick?
Yeah, I was quick.
I'm quick all the time.
I've been married for 19 years and I'm still quick sometimes, you know.
What's wrong with that? You know what I say? Here's what I say, Ryan.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I look at a woman, if that happens, and I just go, because someone told me this works, I mm-hmm. go, compliments to you. And then she's like, that's not going to work.
No.
You fucking are, you're in your 40s, you shouldn't be coming like an 18, a 17-year-old.
No, dude. I mean, I swear to God, I've been with Aaron for 19 years, and sometimes I don't know what happens.
Does she say what
happened?
Three
pumps in, and I'm like, holy shit, slow down.
What is it you think with premature ejaculation? What?
I think, I mean, I can speak for myself, but men, I think, are very
visual.
Visual. super visual,
yeah,
right? The minute I get into the zone and I see it all happening,
yeah,
I'm like, I'm doing this. Oh shit. This, yeah, it's happening right now and I can see everything.
Isn't
and,
that something?
Yeah, and I'm like, it's all beautiful and hot. And I'm like, okay, well, don't look away or something.
That is a beautiful vagina and your penis is going in and out of that. And you're done.
No, and by the way, your penis has never looked better.
Oh, because the lighting is so
Good.
Dark.
It's a nice sheen, though, yeah. You know, maybe a moonlight, yeah.
A shaft of moonlight. Yeah.
It's real. I mean, that those visuals.
Dude, I'm glad you go early.
Yeah, I mean, not all the time.
But she loves you. She's good with it. She's like, hey, he's going to do it better
next time.
Here's
the thing. I think men have a misconception, though. Men think that women just want to have sex for hours. That is just not the case.
And that won't be the case if they're dating me.
Well, good.
Let's promote
your premature ejaculation.
I can never have, if you're a woman out there and you're thinking, oh man, Rosenbaum's kind of cute. I want to have sex with him. Just know, you'll never have hours of sex with
good.
Him.
Good. No one wants that.
If you're counting cumulatively in a decade.
Then you're going to get about an hour and a half.
You're going to get maybe a couple hours. Mm. But go ahead.
In the moments that things are going really well, too well, actually well for me, where I'm like, oh, I'm in a zone now. I can last for however long I want, which happens. Aaron is like, okay, let's get this fucking over with already.
Should I put some Jennifer Aniston Friends exactly. Season 4 on?
She's done. It's a good 8 to 11 minutes, and then boom.
Do you watch any porn?
We used to.
Does that mess up things?
No. I don't watch porn anymore personally. I quit.
I don't either. I mean,
I quit.
Very,
I quit.
Very seldom.
I
swear.
I quit about a year and a half ago.
You say you quit like you're an addict?
I wasn't an actual addict, but I'd use it to self-soothe, meaning like I'm bored. What can I do right now? Oh, I'll jerk off. It's going to pass the time. And much like smoking a cigarette. I quit that as well.
Yeah, I don't smoke either.
You know what I mean?
I quit. Yeah,
but that's why I smoked. I was like, you know, especially on movie sets or TV sets, it was like, okay, in between takes, what am I going to do now? I'm bored. I'll smoke a cigarette.
Stress,
and that's the same
boredom.
With jerking off, dude. Jerking off, it was like, okay, I'm home alone for an hour and a half, 2 hours. What the fuck am I going to do?
Even while you're married, you're jerking off.
Yeah. Not anymore, though, dude. Let me tell you something.
Yeah, tell me.
Since November of last year, I have jerked off probably, I don't know, 10 to 13 times.
Since when?
A year. Just over a year.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'm going to tell you something.
I'm sort of done with it. And by the way, I'm not trying not to.
Done with it. Right.
I'm not trying not to. I just have no desire, but my sex life with Aaron is on fire.
All right. See, I'm not saying this to just make you feel better, because not that you need to feel, but you're, first of all, you're married, you have 3 kids, you have a great life, you're working, you're getting laid, you're doing all these great things. So, I wish I was in your shoes. I really do. But I've never been a jerk-offer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jerk-off. But I've never been a jerk-offer.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember, I just never, I mean, I'm sure I jerked off a little bit in college.
Yeah.
But I've never been one that, like, I got to masturbate. It was one of those things where we're like, now it's been a couple of weeks since you got laid. It's like,
yeah.
All right, I'll jerk off. You know, the problem with me is I have ADD.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's just like, I'm trying to jerk off and now I'm thinking, I think I just heard the wash is done.
You get distracted.
I got to put the clothes in the dryer.
Right.
Is that my dog down there? Maybe something, maybe I should go down there. No, it's just, it's limp, it's hard, it's lit. It's like a fucking slink.
It's terrible. You get distracted
it's
while
just
jerking
like, forget
off.
It. Forget it.
No, I agree. I just, when I was younger, I got mono in high school.
I got mono a couple of years ago.
Really?
Adult mono, dude. I'll tell you about that. That fucked me up, man.
Oh.
You know, Justin Bieber, you see that happen?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, so I had mono and I was home for fucking 2 months or
something. Jerked off. You had the strength to jerk off with mono?
Oh, dude, I was so bored. I jerked off like 10 times a day. I mean,
he must have not had mono then.
Mind. Well, I can sit on a couch and get hard. You know, I mean, that's easy, even with a fever.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sleepy, but I can still jerk off.
Yeah, I didn't get mono when I was a kid. And so maybe because I didn't ever, you know, this is called the kissing disease, which is kind of bullshit. It's like you can get it off a lip balm, you can get off whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I had fight or flight for so long because I was stressing myself out, not being able to deal with stress.
Mm.
that I was a lead on a show, and then I was trying stand up in front of crowds with big comedians, and I'd never done it. And I was in a band for the first time performing on stage. I just did everything at once, and I was not, when I say fight or flight, I was perpetually, consistently in heart, like always nervous, like always on edge, going up till, you know, 2 a.m, getting back home. And something happened, just the perfect storm. Yeah. I was in Germany. I came back and I went to the doctor, and it took me, they go, look for adult mono. Mono. It could take you.
Speaking of jerking off on mono.
But it, I'm telling you, for adults, over a year for me to really start to feel my, who I am again.
So you had Epstein-Barr as well, right? I mean, because that goes.
I guess so, yeah, that whole thing.
Oh,
but
dude,
it was brutal, and I had like high mercury, and I had like real shit. Like I didn't believe it because I was like, I don't have mono. Yeah. No way. Then they thought I had fucking Lyme disease. So they sent me, so one of my friends was like, you should go to this Lyme specialist. So I went to this Lyme specialist. She goes, you have Lyme. Then I went to another Lyme specialist. You have Lyme. I'm like, fuck this. I know I don't have Lyme. She's giving me penicillin shots in my ass.
How do you know you don't have it when you have two doctors tell you?
Because,
you were just listening to your body.
I'm not saying Lyme disease is a hoax, because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of doctors out there that kind of just will be like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you look at your results. So the first thing I did was went to my general practitioner again. I said, listen, man, there's no way I have fucking mono and Lyme disease and babesia or some fucking shit. I've never been bitten. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, I'm going to send you to the Infectious Diseases Center over at Cedars. Mm. And I go, great. I'm excited about this.
Yeah.
And I went there. And this guy was like one of the heads. And he looked through every booklet of all these tests. He goes, you know, let me tell you something. You could listen to me or not. I don't think you have Lyme disease. I think you got mono. And I think you're tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to get better. I don't want you to take these tests anymore. If you took a lot of these tests that they're giving you, I would show up positive in some of these tests. A lot of people would be, I don't think you have or Lyme.
Mm-hmm.
Move on with your life.
Yeah.
And I did. And from that day forward, I started getting better.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not saying Lyme's fake. I'm saying if they say you have Lyme, go to a specialist disease control. And the Lyme people will say, no, doctors say it's bullshit. And some do. But this guy goes, I've seen Lyme. I've seen it. I believe it. I don't think you have Lyme. Mm. And
well, you were autoimmune. I mean, you had autoimmune disease of some sort.
Though. I just was
mono
like,
or whatever it was.
I was fucked, man.
Well, then who the hell are you supposed to believe any these days? You know,
yeah,
I mean,
who knows, man? But I hit a wall, and it was scary because
were you able to work? I mean, were you able to function? I mean, how did you?
No, I was pretty fucked, man. I was like, I couldn't. I think I did some things, but I was like, I'm not at my best. I don't have the confidence because I always feel like I'm going to be too tired.
Yeah,
how am I going to finish this? I still functioned where I tried to sleep,
mm-hmm.
and I tried to watch movies and read, and you know, if my friends did something, but I felt so self-conscious. Like, I know I look like shit. Mm. I know I don't look like myself. I know they're looking at me like I feel. Mm-hmm. They're looking at me and they're just being nice. And some of my friends would just be like, dude, man, you look like shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, ah, fuck. Why am I going out? So I just looked like,
Did it give you any anxiety?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Okay.
I'm telling you, that's when I fucking hit a wall with anxiety. I think that started the whole thing. That anxiety kind of just went boom
that
out
shit
the
is
window.
Real, dude. I mean,
it's real. You have anxiety?
I went in my 20s, I had a year of debilitating anxiety. Like, lose my shit, can't leave the house. Every time I left the house, I was throwing up. You know, I was still trying to be an actor. I was just sort of getting started, really.
Nervous about auditioning,
about
everything?
I didn't know. So it hit me. Actually, I was with my friend John going into Crazy Girls, of all places, right?
Is that a department store?
Yeah, it's a department store on Fairfax. And
they give good hand jobs at the department store, don't
amazing,
they?
Amazing, dude.
Fuck.
Right.
Go ahead.
It is a
Crazy
nice
Girls,
VIP
which was owned previously by...
Slash or something? No.
No, it was the dude who was the... This is going to be the worst way to explain who this guy is. He owned Crazy Girls. He was the deputy cop in Scream.
Mm. David Arquette.
That's it. I think he might have owned one of those
places.
Did
he really? I cannot believe you described David Arquette, the deputy cop.
It's good. How would you describe him?
I fucking got it. I mean,
but
got it.
But how would you describe him? What would you have said? He's married. He's a guy, brother of Patricia Arquette.
Yeah, exactly. The brother of Patricia Arquette.
No, I didn't know Arquette. Right, I couldn't remember the name.
But anyway, so I'm walking in, and my friend John is in front of me, and my heart just out of nowhere explodes, or so I
beating,
think.
Beating.
But boom, it put me on a knee because I was like,
thought you had a heart attack.
I thought I was having a heart attack. And I was like, John. And he didn't hear me. And I took 5 minutes outside. Like, I didn't die. And I was gathering myself. I went in. I had a vodka. I was like, I need something to, I don't know what the fuck just happened to me. Yeah. And I was like, I got to get out of here. Something's weird. That started almost a year of intense anxiety to where I would wake up every day and feel like I couldn't breathe. And
tingling down your arms.
Oh, dude, I would go outside and throw up. And I was surfing a lot of the time, but I was not going to let it affect my life. So I would go out into, I would go under the lineup and fucking throw up and stuff, but try to catch waves. And then I was still trying to be an actor. So I was going to fucking auditions.
You were hiding it because you had to hide it.
It was gnarly.
Then.
It was so intense.
So how did you be?
Meditation, writing in journals. And then I got through most of it, and then there was still a little edge, and then I took antidepressants. I took Celexa. I was on Celexa for a while.
What is Celexa?
Celexa is an antidepressant.
That's not like you go, Celexa, can you turn on the radio? That's not it.
That's funny. No.
What is it?
It's
antidepressant. It's anti-anxiety.
It's an antidepressant, anti-anxiety. Right. It's called an antidepressant. It's an SSRI. It's an uptake. It's a serotonin uptake inhibitor.
Right.
Basically.
Right. I think I took something.
I didn't have a depression, but it was good for to take the edge off of my anxiety.
It really worked?
Oh, dude, it fucking...
Are you still on it?
No. So I got off of that, and then I was working in Nashville for 2 years away from my kids.
On the show Nashville.
Yeah, and I just had my third kid, Rio. She was 10 days old, and I have to go for 2 years to fucking Nashville. So now I'm flying back and forth every chance
That's
I
gonna
got.
That's going to give you anxiety.
It took a toll, and then I had another moment. And
you said, fuck, it's back.
Oh, dude, I had a boom. I had a freak out. And I was Celexa. Like, holy shit. Then I went on to Lexapro. And so now I'm on Lexapro, but I'm weaning off. It's been 3 years. Things are good. So I'm trying to just sort of wean off.
So what triggers this? I'm getting, so it's different for people. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, for me, when you're not sleeping enough,
mm-hmm.
when you're flying too much, when you're not taking care of yourself, when you're not exercising, when you're allowing yourself, if you're not doing all these things, then, you know, you can't fight off this stuff.
Dude, totally. Well, there was two different reasons why in the two separate parts of my life. The first one was just trying to be an actor in my early 20s, right? My mom's a movie star. My dad's a movie star. Kate is now a movie star. And I am trying to fucking do this. I'm not putting my all into it at all. I am just sort of at that point. No, dude. But still, I've put this expectation and this pressure on myself, and it's just not going well. But I wasn't going full speed, because the harder you try, the further it is to fall. You know, if I study for an audition with an inch of its life and I go and I fucking bomb, it's going to hurt. If I don't study and I just go hungover and read the lines in my car as I'm going to the audition and I don't get it, well, fuck, I didn't try. I have an excuse. Good.
Right.
And that's where I was in the ladder. And then it just caught up to me, and through therapy and through, you know, meditation and my journal writing, it all came into view as to why this was happening to me at this time. It was sort of like a quarter life crisis, you know?
I think John Mayer. Maybe it's a quarter life crisis.
Is that Adam? Is that
song?
Write a song?
Yeah, why Georgia is the song.
Why Georgia, why? That's the song. He says a quarter life crisis.
Really?
I never heard it before then.
I didn't even know that was a song.
Quarter life crisis.
Yeah.
But now we're in our midlife
crisis.
We're
in our midlife crisis. That's right. And I kind of had one. I also think just communication. I mean, there was a lot that I held in my later years going to Nashville. You know, it's just the authenticity, you know, holding shit in. Not being truthful to yourself, to people around you, not being expressive, not being vulnerable the way I should be vulnerable. I mean, all of these things, being away from my family. I think that's what led to this.
All right, you know what's happening right now? I'm going to be honest with you.
What?
I knew you were coming in here. I was excited. Hadn't seen you for a while. Always liked you. Just a genuine dude. Always liked you. We didn't hang out really, but I liked you.
We had moments. We had moments
and some laughs, but just, you know.
Yeah.
But now, just 20 minutes into this, I'm learning so much. And I love that you're so open about this shit, because this is like,
it's important, dude.
I you know, fuck everybody else listening. Mm-hmm. It's really about me.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
No, but it's just, it's ringing in my ears. Mm-hmm. Like it seems like, you know, I've talked about this through all the other podcasts, but this is what I think we're all listening. We're going, you're giving us little things. Maybe it's just one thing we mm-hmm. learned from you, mm-hmm. but you're being so open about how you beat your anxiety mm-hmm. that when something's not working for someone else, then go, you know, Oliver Hudson did this. He journaled mm-hmm. about how he was feeling and he did this and this. Maybe I'll give that a shot.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll try different things. And that's really the key, is to just do whatever it takes.
No, totally. And by the way, I've always been an open book, and I think it's important now. That's why I love what you're doing. I love what we're doing in the space, right?
Thank you.
It's time to fucking tell the truth. I think we can. You can help people with your truth and your authenticity. Yeah. Who gives a fuck what people think? You know what I mean? Like,
that's what I'm getting over. Yeah.
Who's going to listen to this right now and say, oh my God, Oliver had anxiety? Or Oliver, you know, took antidepressants. I mean, I don't give a fuck. I mean, that stuff does not affect
me
at all.
And by the way, the fact that you're saying that, now, I'm not sure I believe you completely.
Why not?
Now, no, I believe you. I believe that you care what everyone else thinks. Hang on, less than me. But I'm not sure you're completely like it doesn't somehow affect you.
Okay. You're not wrong. Okay. And here's how you're not wrong. When it comes to the stuff that we were just talking about in my personal life and the things that I believe in or my truth.
You don't give a fuck.
I don't give a fuck.
I agree with you.
Okay.
Okay, I'm with you. Now I get
as
it.
As a performer, as an entertainer, as an actor, as I do. And that has been my downfall.
Me too.
As an actor.
Sure.
I think that I have not touched my potential because of fear. 100%.
How do we get over that?
And on my 24th birthday, Kurt, my stepdad.
Kurt Russell, folks.
Right. He pulls me in, and this is right when I started acting. I mean, I was 21, 22. Actually, 24 is when I got my first gig, and I was going to do this job, one of my first big jobs. And I was so scared and so nervous. And by the way, I still get so fucking nervous when I go work.
Of course.
It makes me crazy.
It's like, I would be so great if I didn't have to do. No, but it's part of you. I don't want be a part of me.
Totally.
Not this much.
Yeah. No, I'm so with you. I'm like, don't give me the it's a part of you or use it bullshit.
Give me a little bit.
Just let me be free and then I'll be good, right? But he told me, he goes, here's the thing. The talent is all there. The problem is with you. He goes, you just have to stop giving a shit what people think about you. And it's true, but that's him, okay? And this is what I learned later on. I was always, for 10 years, trying not to give a shit. I'm trying not to give a shit, because Kurt truly doesn't give a shit about what people think about him in the acting space. And my brother Wyatt Russell right now.
Hockey player, goalie. I love that
goalie.
Guy.
He's crushing it. He's an actor and fucking crushing it right now.
Right.
His confidence
doesn't give a shit.
Is through the roof. He doesn't give a shit. He's like, I'm going to do it the way I want to do it. And if you don't think it's good, I don't give a shit. I tried to emulate that. The problem is, the realization I had was, that's not who I am.
That's not your makeup.
Exactly. That's who these people are, but that's not who I am. And once I recognized that, it was sort of liberating in a way. It's okay to give a shit, but just don't let it
rule you.
Right. You can care, you know, but there's a way to sort of curb the anxiety around that caring so much.
An expectation. You know what? I have to say this. I was selfishly thinking while you were talking, oh my God, Kurt had a conversation with Kurt Russell, Snake Plissken, and he looked at him and he said words of wisdom, don't give a shit. And from then on, Oliver ruled the world. And then I was going to say, is there any way Kirk can have this conversation with me? That's what went through my fucking psychotic mind. If it worked for you. But okay, so.
But it didn't. The point is it didn't. I had to discover it myself.
Right, because this is basic fucking education here. Mm-hmm. This is, Be yourself.
Mm-hmm. And this translates to every job, every,
is who you are. Right. Ryan, if you're shy, you're a little awkward, which you are.
Right. Yeah, I can sense that.
Who gives a fuck? Because you're brilliant. I've seen his shit. He's brilliant. Look at his YouTube videos. And he hasn't even scratched the surface. I know what this guy can do. Right now, he's working with me. And hopefully for a while. Yeah. But, you know.
I hit the shit out of a record button. I tell you what, though.
No, I know.
Exactly. But I think that there's like, hey, Rosie, you're a little spastic. Mm. You're neurotic. Look at your genes, dude. You come from manic depression and crazy shit and Valium-induced rages and all this, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, but this is who you are.
Yeah.
Try to be as healthy as you can. And you know what? If you fall apart every once in a while, it's okay.
Totally.
And I'm with you when you say the anxiety stuff and this. I am much better. I don't care. I'm talk about it openly about me going to a wellness center, me doing that fucking please.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to certain things, like, you know, just offer this movie, and I'm like, I don't think I could do it. I don't think I could do it right now. I don't think I could learn 100 pages of lines in 2 weeks and then go. And some people go, you don't have to learn 200 pages. You just go the night before. I don't work like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to stress myself to the fucking death of me. Dude, if I don't have time to prepare and be fucking great, I will freak myself out not knowing lines. Give me a fucking earwig.
Yeah.
Do whatever. There's all this shit that comes with it. But you know what? Maybe I should embrace it. Maybe I go, Rosie, you're fucking right.
Yeah.
Why would you put yourself through hell for that?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Do your podcast.
Yeah.
Wait for the right thing.
Yeah.
Develop your show. Talk to people. Go to some cons. Enjoy life. Why kill yourself?
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless somebody can just fix me.
But if you're running away from it because of those fears, then that's not the right place to be, I don't think. You know what I mean? Like, if this movie's a good movie and it's a great character and it's something that you want to do, but the idea of going to do it makes you too nervous and now you're not going to do it because of that.
Well, there was other things like, Chicago, dead of winter, outside. Yeah, you know.
Is there money?
Fed surgeries. Not a ton.
No.
So, I like the guy. He's a good writer.
Yeah.
You know, I want to do his other movie. I probably will.
Right.
If he doesn't listen to this or if he listens to it, I'll know that I respect him.
By the way, lines, you say memorization of lines. That is the biggest problem for me.
Me too.
For me, it's not about whether I'm a good actor or not. It's like, oh my God, can I remember the lines? And if I don't, everyone's going to think, oh, this fucking guy doesn't know his lines. And now we're not going to lunch on
time. That's a fear. And,
yeah.
Is it more about the lines than it is about the performance? Though? Is it real? Do you have muscle memory where it becomes easier or is it always hard?
No, it becomes easier. It becomes easier. And it's also, again, sort of saying, you know what? Here's what I tell myself. We're all here to do a job on this movie set, right? We need craft service for food. We need grips. We need electricians. We need everyone. Everyone fucks up. How many times is it like, all right, wait, cut. We got to reset this light. Or the DP says, this isn't working. I need 15 more minutes.
So the actor could fuck up.
I'm allowed to fuck up. And I'm allowed to say, oh, shit, sorry, guys. I'm going up on my line 6 times. Fuck off.
I know that. But there is a part of me that wants, this is what I have to change. You're making me realize this. There's a part of me that I'm never late. I hit my marks every time. I come in. I don't even need my script. I read it. I fucking know it. I don't even want to rehearse. Let's fucking shoot it. I know it inside out. I put so much pressure on myself. I fucking live it. And then I do it that I don't want to fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
If I feel lost out there, like I don't know these lines, that is terrifying. To me, that is like dropping the ball. You are a failure. They're all going to see through your shit. You're going to embarrass yourself. I remember there was one take in a movie that took me 13 takes to say a line because I was so in my head that I couldn't even think of the line.
Oh, yeah.
I could not even think that. Just stop for a second, breathe, think of it. It didn't matter what the line was.
Gone.
It wasn't coming
it's
out.
Blank.
It came out somehow. And I think God jumped in my body for a second.
Yeah.
He helped me out in that moment. In this movie that made no money, he helped me.
Yeah, dude. No, I know that. I mean, you just go completely blank. I have a story about that. I was doing a sitcom.
Rules of Engagement?
Rules of Engagement, right, for 7 years.
Yep.
Live audience. And we were well into the series. I forget what season it was. There was a scene
Spade, Patrick Warburton.
Yeah.
Right.
And I had to do this scene right center stage in front of the whole fucking audience. There's like 200 or 300 people, however many people. I forget the line. Okay. I forget it again. Now it's
in your head.
In my head. And now I'm done. And there's no one there to save me. No, the EP, the executive producer, writer, director, no one said, all right, you know what? Let's just give it a second. Or I was just twisting in the wind. I realized in that moment that I had to take this into my own hands, because the audience now went from laughing that I fucked up a line, because they do, to now it's quiet.
Embarrassing.
And now I'm six takes in and I cannot get these lines out. And now everyone is feeling for me and this audience, dude.
You take two or three, you were probably already thinking that moment's going to come.
Oh, 100%.
Here they come. They're not going to laugh now.
Yeah.
I'm going to fuck it up again.
Yeah.
You're already anticipating your fuck up.
And it was like a page and a half scene, hitting marks and running around, all four cameras rolling. Finally, I said, all right. And I took control of everything because I couldn't deal with it anymore. I said, here's what's going to fucking happen. I lost it. I snapped.
You did.
Oh, I said, okay, Bianca, who is my co-star, I was like, go, let's start the scene. Cameras, you fucking rolling? Keep them rolling. Let's go. You ready? Script was right. What's the big thing? She tells me the line. I do the thing. I do whatever my sitcom-y thing is. I hit the mark. All right. What? Move the cameras. I know we're repositioning. What's the next line? Tells it to me. I did it in four parts and just went through it like that and said, hey, tell me the line. Okay, great. Ba, 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 ba. Finished it up. I go, all right, we're done. That's it. We're done.
Was everybody like, oh my God?
Oh, well, the audience started to cheer, you know, because it was, there was a release of some
maybe
sort.
Maybe we're
there.
Moving on finally. Exactly. Or, hey, he fucking like, right?
Exactly.
Right.
But it was that moment of, I am so fucked.
And you took control.
I had to. I had to save myself. It was desperation time. No one was reaching out to me and saying, oh, dude, let's just, hey, Ollie, you want like 10 minutes, dude? You want 10 minutes just to chill?
That's probably been worse. 10 minutes would have been worse. Totally. I can't think straight.
It's just more to
you know what I was
go.
Thinking you were going to do? This is what I would have done. And I think this happened like in a live. I was doing a sitcom. And I said the line, blah, blah. And my dad was there that night. And that's a big thing because, like, you know.
Yeah.
Talk about feeling like failure. And
Yeah.
So I'm there. And I do this thing. And they go, Rosie, yeah, let's take it back. Let's do that again. And I remember I stumbled. And I was like, and the director's like, all right, cool. Moving on. And I knew. I didn't care.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't care if he's moving on.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care if it sucked. Yeah. I want to move on.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
All. And so I think in that situation, I might have been like, you know what, guys? We could always pick this up when you're not here. You know the scene. You've seen it. We're going to pick it up after the show. I'm not going to hold up your time because I don't know my goddamn lines. And make a joke and be done with it after take two.
Yeah.
We're going to do it afterwards. I'm not doing it now. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
Okay. They would have listened to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, so, for sure.
Why do we get so terrified?
I don't know. Because we
care.
We care. Yeah. But
we care too much.
But we care too much. Or we. I think I just care what – I care how people perceive me.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Look, how many times in interviews over your life has it, and it's a wonder too. You talk about the pressures, you talk about, you know, you're 20 and like, here's Kate has this huge success, and here's my dad's Kurt Russell and my mom's, you know, Goldie Hawn. It's like, of course, it's like, how are you not going to compare and go, I guess I should be a movie star.
Yeah.
It's that easy.
Yeah.
I should just be a movie star.
Yeah.
And you're working and all these things.
Sure. I mean, but the thing is, it's not what I wanted to do. I mean, I wanted to make movies. Like when my
Direct produce.
Yeah, direct produce, write.
Right.
That's what I did when I was a kid. While Kate was doing plays, I had cameras and filters and squibs and blood and fucking latex.
Horror movie.
Oh, I loved all that shit.
You and I should make a horror movie.
Oh, I would love to. I really would. I'm
writing
a
horror series
movie.
Right now, and it's fucking good.
Dude.
Two actors talking about their pride, but it is, man. It is.
No, I loved all that shit. I grew up on horror, you know, and that's what I did. And then I went to college for 2 years, left Boulder. I was going to kill myself there. I was just drinking and skiing pretty much. Then I worked at, as a PA for 2 years, production assistant on movies. And then I went to an SC summer intensive thing, which was really fun. And then I was like, I don't know what the fuck I'm going
to
do.
But you had to know you were good looking. Because I remember seeing you when I was, you know, and I was like, man, that guy's really cute. Just a cute guy. Good looking, cute, clean cut guy. So you had looks. I mean, your mom's Goldie Hawn. Was Bill Hudson a good looking guy?
Yeah.
He's stud. You don't talk to him. Stud. I know that, right?
There's nothing. No, we do now. We do now. A little bit. Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy story. I mean, I was working in New Orleans, and it was Father's Day. And I posted something with my sick sort of dark sense of humor. And it was a picture of my sister and my dad and myself in happy times. And the caption was Happy Abandonment Day. And I thought it was funny. I still think it was funny, but...
But you hadn't talked to him in how long?
Oh.
Ever.
I hadn't seen him in 13, 14 years, 15 years.
But who would have thought that Bill Hudson was on the Instagram?
Well, he wasn't. But what happened was, is the press picked it up. And then it caught fire, and then it all went viral. And then, of course, because my sister is my sister, she got included into the whole thing. The comments on that post just fucking started stacking up. But I mean, it turned into this whole thing.
People being nice or people kind of...
Both.
Yeah.
Both.
Supportive and like,
yeah,
hey,
both. And then... And I was like, oh, shit. I was just trying to be funny, you know.
Did your mom think it was funny?
I mean, she was like, Oliver, you know, she did one of those. And Kate, same thing. Kate was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I was just trying to make a fucking joke.
How old are you again?
I'm 43.
When this happened?
No, this was, I was like 39.
Okay, so it wasn't 40? Long ago.
This is recently-ish.
Right, right. So
then my dad comes out with an article on like the Daily Mail saying that my kids are dead to me. And I mean, he was very hurt by it because he had heard about it. He's not on Instagram. And then I wrote him a text. I got his number and wrote him a long text. And it wasn't mean, but it was stern. And I apologized, but didn't in a way. You know, I said, look, who are you to be
dead to me? You have been dead to me.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. I'm like, who are you to be angry about this, Dad? I mean, let's get real for a fucking second. And it led to a phone call, which was a 3-hour phone call, which was really
emotional?
An amazing phone call. No right. Tears, but it was, you know, it was, I sort of put him on the witness stand. You know what I mean? I was just grilling him. It was just talking about my life and, you know, everything. And I'm a man now. I'm no longer even in my 20s when we talked last. I mean, things are different. It was a great conversation. I finished this job. I went back to LA and had an amazing breakfast with him at Patrick's Roadhouse.
What was that like? You haven't seen your dad in years and years.
It was crazy.
I mean, did you get really anxious before it?
A little bit, yeah. But I was, I felt strong. You know, it was interesting. I went from being sort of, well, I've made myself the victim, really, even through my childhood, because, you know, as a kid, you think you did something wrong and you think it's your fault, obviously, in the sort of after school special way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not. But now I felt different. I felt like I was in the power seat and I was able to go in
you
there.
You talk to me. So
and I went in there.
Did you give him a hug?
Yeah. Yeah, I went in there. He had long, scraggly hair.
He's a musician.
Big white beard. And I was like, oh, my God. And I'm getting older now. And I was like, holy shit, I look just like this fucker. I mean, it was.
The eyes, I bet.
Oh, yeah, the eyes.
I've never seen what he looks like, but yeah.
The eyes. I mean, and I gave him a big hug and we had breakfast and it was an amazing talk. And then we sat outside of Patrick's Roadhouse and smoked a pack of cigarettes together, which was amazing. And even that was part of the catharsis. You know what I mean? We're just
the moment with your dad that you've never had.
It was beautiful. I mean, we connected on a really interesting level. He was opening up to me about certain things in his life. You know, his dad bailed on him in the middle of the night when my dad was 5 years old. So he was destined to repeat this pattern.
He missed it by a year.
Yeah.
You were four.
I know. But he was destined because I knew that this fucked me up at a young age. I wanted to get help. I wanted to figure my shit out so I didn't do this again to my children. He didn't have that luxury. You know, it was a different time. Therapy was in a different place. Like, he didn't have a chance. And he said a lot of things about my mom and a lot of things. Oh, yeah, yeah, really nice. And it was an amazing, talk.
So you forgave him?
Oh, yeah, big time. And then we went out to Moonshadows about 3 months later and then drank a ton of beer. And that's when it got emotional, actually. He started to get emotional and we were just, we went from hammering shit out to some resolution.
To hammered,
exactly. To now actually just having fun. And him seeing a lot of who he was in me and me seeing a lot of who I am in him, you know, and it was really an amazing moment. And now we have a relationship, you know. So from that fucking disastrous post or seemingly disastrous post came something really beautiful, you know.
I commend you.
Yeah,
I commend you both, really. But, you know, I mean, there's two things I would have thought about. One is like, I mean, it doesn't matter. You have to forgive. You have to let go. But it's like, you know, you didn't have to repeat your fucking father what he did, but you did. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what do? So you either hold that grudge and say, fuck off, or mm-hmm. go, you know what? Why do I want this? There's something deeper that I just want to know more. I want to like, you know, why mm-hmm. go another 30 years or never?
No, totally.
Why not have these moments, even mm-hmm. if it's just one moment that turned into a couple moments?
For sure. And by the way, when you look at, when you really get into it, How can I not forgive him? How can I not be compassionate when I look back on his life and what he went through as a kid with his mom and dad? How can I not feel for him? Yeah. Take myself out of the equation. That's the first thing I said to him when I saw him at Patrick's Roadhouse.
Right.
It was a little small talk, you know, and then I'm the one who I was like, all right, let's talk. I mean, this is the first time I've seen you. Let's talk. And I said, the first thing I want to say is, let's just put aside that you're my dad and that I'm your son. You and I are very similar. We have very similar stories.
Crazy.
Your dad bailed. Mm-hmm. My dad bailed. We could sit here and talk as friends and fucking connect and relate right now. And I feel your pain. You know what I mean? And so that's how it started. And it was a good place to start.
Mutual, just a respect.
Exactly.
Not in an angry place.
Yeah.
Let's try to breathe through it. Let's try to talk.
Like, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So there's a lot. I mean,
was your mom upset about it?
I mean, when I went and was talking,
because
to
a
him?
Lot of moms, I know people get mad. They're like, no, that piece of shit that mm-hmm. you're just going to go. You've had this great father. Kurt's been great.
No.
You got to go talk to him. No. But you know how people could think that.
Oh, yeah.
Because was it your mom who left Bill?
I don't even know.
I
think so. I think so.
Right. So.
I think so. But no, my mom was not. No, my mom has always been great with this stuff.
What did Kate do?
That's a good question. My sister, you know, she had a different relationship with him. She was younger. You know, I mean, I was the boy and sort of needed that father figure. You know, maybe Kate took a little bit more from Kurt than I did. I don't know. But Kate wasn't where I was.
Right.
Kate's totally content, you know, not having a relationship with him now.
She hasn't, right?
No. But there's no animosity anymore.
Right.
You know, there's no anger, you know.
Do you talk about this on Sibling Revelry?
Not really.
No. Do you ever talk about this stuff?
Not like this. But yeah, I mean, when I get into heavy conversations or deep conversations with people, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you said, I'm open, man. I think it's important
cathartic.
Stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I love how candid and open you are. I mean, it's
why not be? I mean, what do I have to fucking hide? You know what I mean? I mean, there's probably some things I don't want to say.
Yeah.
The only reason I wouldn't say things is just because I don't want other people to not want me to say them. On Sibling Revelry, we don't talk a lot about my mom and Kurt and the family dynamic.
That's the rule on that show.
Well, yeah, for us. You know, there's some things that we just keep out of it because I know that, you know, Kurt doesn't want things exposed and my mom doesn't want things exposed. And I'm not saying there's anything, you know, secret, but just our lives together.
Right.
That's sort of special. Katie and I talk about our relationship, you know, the depth of our relationships. You know, and
do you ever get mad at her on the podcast? Do you ever
sometimes,
like literally you're fucking annoying?
No, but sometimes I'll call her on her stuff. You know, when Kate gets, she'll get a little, you know, high and mighty, and I'll sort of have to knock her off her pedestal a little bit.
Were you do you feel like you were ever like jealous of her or like envious, like comparing yourself?
Course,
like, why did she get fucking almost famous?
Of course.
You know, why, you know,
It's one of my biggest issues was the comparing myself to everyone. If you right now said, oh, dude, I got the new Scorsese thing, I would be happy for you, but there's definitely a part of me who's like, you fuck, dude, what?
But
there's no, I mean, I think
there's a difference though. There's a difference if you're comparing yourself, like, you know, that guy has it, so I should have it. You know, that's not healthy, right? And I believe it's a learning curve with anybody. It's like, first of all, I'm just genuinely, it feels so good when you can go, I want you to be successful.
Oh,
I want you to do it. But yeah, of course,
it feels
great
when you can feel that. Or but really, when you can really feel that, not fake feel that, because sometimes I have to do that.
Yeah,
sometimes I have to be like, oh, I'm so happy for you. And then when I start to say it and force myself to say it, I'll start to feel it.
Yeah.
But that initial thing, I'm like, okay, force yourself to say it, you know. And then once I do, then I melt a little bit. But no, for sure, dude. I mean, there's competition. And it's not jealousy as much as it is envy. She's had such an amazing career. And even Wyatt right now. Wyatt, you know, from the very beginning, he busted his groin and had too many concussions. And he comes home and he goes, I want to be an actor. And he's fucking immediately at Sundance in the first year with two movies. You know, and I'm like, you fuck. Like, yeah, I'm making money and I'm on a great sitcom that's doing well. But there's a part of me that is envious of the creative that they get to be a part of, you know.
Yeah,
they've done amazing things with amazing people. And you know, Wyatt did Linklater's movie, Everybody Wants Some, and he was in Austin, Texas for 3 weeks with all the crew and writing with Linklater. And you know, Kate's with Cameron Crowe, and Wyatt's doing all these cool independent movies with visionaries, you know.
Yeah,
you know, people who are now uber successful. It's a different trajectory.
Yeah,
people would look at me and kill to have my career.
Of course.
You know, but, you know, it's there's a relativity there. I look at them and I'm, you know,
but
I want some of that.
The more, it's okay. That's okay to want.
No, it's okay.
But it is certainly, it's hard and we don't do it enough.
Mm-hmm.
Where I guarantee you don't do this nearly enough. I'd say very little.
Mm.
Where you just sit there for a minute by yourself, sit in your house. Nobody's in the house. Or maybe they are.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the three little kids, the little amigos, they're running around, they're kicking something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Aaron's, you know, in a bra, I'm hoping.
Yeah, hope so.
And you
depends what kind of bra, though.
Probably cotton.
I know, but here's the problem. She's going to hate me for saying this, but she's been wearing these, they're like armor bras. It's like so, you know, padded, even though she's got beautiful big boobs, as you probably can remember. They're amazing.
I got to the boobs. I'll be honest with you. That's it.
Incredible. I mean, really fantastic. I mean, all time.
Yeah, rub it in, buddy.
All time.
Rub it in.
But she wears these sort of more padded things just to, you know, I don't know, protect. I don't know, we know why.
Protect
them. And I'm like, give me the lace again. Give me the soft stuff. Anyway, go
ahead.
You
know what? Keep playing subliminally. Keep playing Stevie Nicks in the background.
Yeah.
Leather and Lace,
song. Yeah.
And she'll start to go subconsciously. Yeah. It's like a David Blaine trick.
That's a good idea.
You're going to fucking, all of a sudden, you're going to be like, dude, what happened? Bosom buddies over here. No, what I'm saying is, try this.
Yeah.
And by the way, I need to do this more. And I have been. Sit there and go, God, look at me, man. I got this beautiful wife. These three kids live in a nice house. I like my parents. Got this relationship with my dad. Got this cool podcast. Made a lot of money. I know it sounds stupid.
No.
Start just saying these things out loud.
Mm-hmm.
Keep saying them. And all of a sudden you're going to realize, dude, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And I think that's the more grateful we are.
I was about to say gratitude.
But by the way, it's hard. It's not as easy as you think, but it is.
Yeah.
It's science.
Yeah.
If we just like, dude, I'm doing this. I'm working so hard to just go. And I am. I go, hey, you got a podcast.
Yeah.
People listen to it. They like it. I'm on Patreon.
Yeah.
I have patrons. I have a relationship with my friends. I have two great dogs. I sleep in a bed.
Yeah.
If you just start doing this, you start realizing, and then when you start doing the charity and stuff, you start realizing like, God, I'm not dying.
No.
I'm alive. I've got to stop comparing and worrying and just live. And I think that's the thing for all of us. And I'm not I'm not preaching.
No, I'm telling you, this is,
I need to do this, more.
Oh, by the way, this is something that everyone should do.
Especially Ryan.
I don't know him, but he just looks like he needs to be more grateful.
You need to be more appreciative.
Yeah, you do.
I'll work on it.
You do. Yeah,
he's
appreciative.
He is.
No, but you're not wrong, dude. And you know, I write, you know, little words of gratitude every day. I do that. I mean, not every day, but I when I have times of what the fuck, or I need this, or I need more money, and three kids at fucking private school. I mean, it's gnarly.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, what's the worst that can happen? Here's the worst. I sell everything and move to fucking Colorado.
You know what the
and
worst thing
what?
Is?
Yeah. I'll be happy.
You know what you know what the worst thing is? I hate to say it, but think about it, because, you know, this is going to air way later, but Kobe Bryant.
I know. Dude, this that
millions
was,
of dollars has everything.
Yeah.
Gone.
I know.
Like that. So
horribly.
I mean,
tragic.
If you really think about it, if we just take today and just live this day and do the best we can and try to have fun and try not to take things too seriously. I think that that's when our anxiety sort of goes away.
Totally.
I think when you can just be happy with yourself, because I am trying to be happy with myself. I just had somebody come over the house and I'm working on stuff, and you know, I'm always looking for a miracle, but the miracle, I think, probably lies within me.
What's your biggest, like, what's your biggest issue?
You know what I mean? Like, I think pain. I deal with a lot of pain.
Yeah.
So,
like, actual physical pain. Oh, you
and
do.
And I'm trying to, like, you know, because I've had surgeries and things, and I deal with it. And I don't talk about it, really.
Right.
Not a lot.
Why
I just,
don't you talk about
because
it?
Because I don't, no one wants to hear it. I'm trying to learn how to deal with it, but I think a lot of it is emotional. I think,
is it chronic pain?
Yeah, it's chronic pain. It's been with me for a while, but it's gotten worse. And
do you know,
like, you wouldn't know for the most part, right?
But is it undiagnosed pain?
No, I've had fusion in my neck.
You
I
have.
Had a botched surgery. I had a bunch of stuff.
Okay.
But
I've heard you talk about that on your podcast.
Yeah, like a little, like a surgery. I say, oh, I had this surgery. But I don't, what I'm saying is I don't sit there and go, oh my God, Rob, I'm in so much pain, man. I can't deal with it. I can't. I don't burden people with all that stuff because I also think, you know, you have all these great things. Why should you burden? Which is stupid. It doesn't matter if you're a good friend, you'll fucking listen. Because I listen to everybody's fucking problems.
Right.
Anybody has a problem, they come to me, I'll fucking help them. I always fucking am there for my friends.
Me too.
I'm not saying they're not there for me. They are. But I think they assume that I'm just good, which I should be, but I'm not, because I'm fucking human and I'm neurotic and I've got my shit.
Yeah.
And I'm not always good.
Yeah.
You saw me at Thanksgiving break down a little bit.
I wasn't there.
Well, you didn't see it. Somebody should have taped it and sent it to you.
Emotionally breakdown?
Yeah, I just, you know, we'll talk about this on your fucking podcast. Do you even have, you can't have me on there.
Do you have a sibling?
Yeah, I have my brother.
So bring him on.
Ooh, that would get crazy.
Good.
I think people would like that, but I don't know, man. I don't know if he's willing to talk about, like, you know, his shit.
We don't have to
talk to him, because I mean, it might come up, and it's like, you know, because we worked together. He was my assistant for 5 years.
Oh, and shit happened. Oh, you got to bring him on, dude. It'll be great. I mean, it'll be great.
I love him.
Kate's the great diffuser too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And it's super chill like this.
Dude, I love this. I don't want this interview to end, and I haven't even looked at this the whole time. This is the pages that I kind of looked at.
That's.
I just want to say this. What if I just went off? I just want to say that I love your mom and Seems Like Old Times. I loved Chevy Chase's performance in that, and her performance. Now, you know what?
By the way, that is one of my mom. That's probably
Charles Grodin.
Could be my mom's, my favorite movie that my mom has done. It Seems Like Old Times. It is fucking untouchable. I love it so much.
Dude, I love that movie.
Oh, dude, it's
remember when
it's
at the
so
end,
good.
I'll tear up. Remember when she just runs into his house at the end?
She's like that big smile freeze frame.
Oh, you're like, I just wanted them to get together.
It's
they bump
so
into
great.
It. It's so sweet.
I know.
I love it. I mean, dude. But look, I mean, it's so cool. It's so, you know, it's like you've heard every story. You've met every celebrity. It's probably not cool for you anymore, because it's like people would say, oh, my God, to be Goldie Hawn and to be Kurt Russell. Kurt, was he a good dad?
Oh, yeah. He changed the whole direction of my life and the whole dynamic of who I might have been. I mean, if it wasn't for Kurt, I would not be the man that I am today. 100%.
I
mean,
right?
He gave not only myself, but my family Colorado, which is a huge part of my life and my upbringing. You know, he taught me how to be independent and how to not be afraid. and to, you know, learn how to do things on my own and not rely on anyone else. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of lessons.
That is just like hearing that. Like, I see your relationship with your mom, and I hear this about Kurt, because I remember I went up, Kurt and Goldie were at a party that I was at, and they were just standing there, and I just had seen this movie, Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, yeah.
And I just had to, because I'm a horror movie fan, and I just go, hey, you're beautiful. I love you. And Kurt, I just saw Bone Tomahawk. I love it. You guys take care. Have a nice evening. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say hi. I don't care. Yeah. I'm not those actors who are like, oh, I won't say hi to someone. Fuck you. Then why are you in the business?
Right.
Because you're an actor.
Right.
Fuck you.
Right.
Fucking
right.
Go meet your fucking heroes. Go say hi to your heroes.
Totally.
Because, you know, you die tomorrow. You can go fucking see. It's too cool.
Yeah.
I fucking hate that.
No.
People are like, I love Stern. And Stern was on this morning. He's like, ooh, I don't need to go up to somebody. I don't need to go up. You know, it's like, why do you do that? Who does?
Yeah.
Because why not?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you bothering them?
Yeah.
They're at a party just to say I love you?
Yeah.
Whatever. Who gives
Nothing's
a fuck?
Nothing's wrong. No, I agree.
But your dad, when I say your dad, what am I supposed to say?
That's it. We call him Pa.
Pa.
Yeah.
So
we
you're
call him
Pa. Who I fucking adore. He was so sweet. And I was walking away. He goes, hey, whoa. Come here. I go, yeah. He goes, I love Bone Tomahawk too. Let's talk about this.
No, really?
Why did you like it? And I go, because I thought it was really funny and then got explosively dark and I got caught up in these characters. I had no idea it was going to happen. And we just started talking for 20 minutes about this.
That's awesome.
And he was just so
cool,
man.
That's actually interesting, because that doesn't sound like Kurt too much.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
What would he have done in your eyes?
Oh, thank you. That's the end of it. You know what I mean?
He wanted to talk about it.
That's interesting.
Oh, God.
That's not like him.
He won't watch this, but tell him, my buddy who I was just on his podcast, I'm telling you, he'll remember.
Yeah.
Say he came up to you at a party like a year ago and he just said, let's talk Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah.
And you sat there because he loved it so much and you talked about it.
Yeah.
I said, I loved it too. Why did you love it?
Yeah.
What was it about? And we talked about the splitting the guy in half. You saw it, right?
Yeah.
Fuck, man. That movie's intense.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I heard a story too that your dad, or Paul, you're driving. I just want to add a couple little fun stories here. We've been real. We've been, you know, but you know that you were driving with Kate and Kurt's driving. Is this true?
Mm-hmm.
Your mom's driving. You know what I'm going to say.
I don't yet.
And there's a truck driver or something cutting him off. Paint the picture.
Yeah.
Go
ahead. Yeah. We were in Hawaii. And we were just trying to get around this big semi truck.
And how old are you?
Oh, shit.
Little boy.
Yeah.
Six, seven.
No, because Wyatt was alive, I think. So I was probably 12, I think.
Okay.
Something
so
like
you remember.
That.
It's vivid.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And the semi will not let us pass him. And he's doing it on purpose, right? So then Kurt goes over into the shoulder and then cuts in front of him. And now we come up to a stoplight and the guy gets out of the car and who's driving the truck. And then Kurt gets out of the car.
And it doesn't even flinch.
No, because I think that if something was going to go down, you don't want to be in your car. You want to be up and out. So, you know, you have a better chance.
He pulled over.
Yeah. Well, it's at the stoplight.
Okay.
And the guy, Kurt's like, look, you know, I'm with the family. I was just trying to get by you, you know, diffusing the whole thing. And the guy was just not having it, you know, sort of poking Kurt, doing little shoves. Big dude, big, like 300+ pound guy. Kurt went to go turn away just to get out of the situation. And the guy just clocks him. And of course, Kurt doesn't go down because his jaw's made of a material that doesn't exist on the earth. And he just lights him up, but he only goes to the body, which was really interesting. He went to the body and backed him up into his truck and then finished him off with a right hand to the face. Boom. The guy, I think Kurt knocked a tooth out, and he's looking up and laughing at him, and he goes, Kurt Russell just knocked my teeth out. And Kurt comes back to the car and we get in and we cruise. And that was that.
I heard, obviously you know the story. Mm-hmm. I thought he said, I just got my tooth knocked out by Snake Plissken.
Oh, maybe.
But whatever.
I think it was Kurt Russell.
But you saw him do this.
Yeah.
Could he throw punches?
Oh, yeah. I think Kurt could probably still beat me up. I mean,
he could probably beat anybody up.
Yeah,
he's Kurt Russell.
He's all you can handle. He's a tough man.
Have you seen?
But he's soft as shit.
Have you seen him lose his temper?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he's my dad. You know what I mean?
Does he look like he's? Does it like when he's in the movies where he gets that stern?
Yeah.
This is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because he taps into that shit.
Oh, that's it.
Favorite Kurt Russell movie.
Oh God, there's so many. I love Backdraft for so many reasons.
Oh yeah, bro.
I cry every time. I also love Breakdown. You ever see Breakdown?
No.
Oh, you got to see it. It's a tight movie. With JT Walsh, he's in it. Kurt plays a different kind of character, sort of a do-good husband who's driving cross country, and they break down, and then it takes a really bad turn.
What about The Thing?
Of course, dude. Those movies are incredible. Escape from New York, The Thing. You know, he's done Tombstone. Whenever Tombstone's on, I just can't stop watching. And then, by the way, dude, Overboard.
Oh, one of the best so far.
It's like every time I'm crying. Every fucking time I cry.
Yeah, and it's your mom.
Yeah. I know. Well, because when she's leaving at the end in the limousine and the kids are all banging on the window, sort of saying, "Mom, where are you going?" And she's closing her ears because she can't hear it. I'm like, oh, fuck. That's gnarly.
What's your favorite Goldie movie?
Oh, man. I mean, Private Benjamin. Wildcats. Love Wildcats. Oh, yeah. I was there for Wildcats.
You were?
Oh yeah, I remember. I would Wesley Snipes, who that was, like, I think it was his first movie. He was my homie. I mean, Wesley was the coolest dude, and I would be on his shoulders running around the thing, and it was Woody Harrelson, and they were all like these newbie actors. That was fun. That was fun. In Chicago. That was dope.
Hey, real quick, these are quick questions. Yeah. This is from some Patreons.
Yeah.
Real quick. Lisa. What was it like being on the iconic Dawson's Creek? Because I think you did like 18 episodes, right? Any stories from the set? Season. Any quick story? We do these rather quickly.
I loved it, dude. I loved it because I worked 2 days. I had a house right on the beach. I surfed every day. And I met some really good friends there. And Katie Holmes and I actually became good friends. And that sort of
You didn't make love?
Out. No, we didn't make love.
You didn't kiss?
I was with Aaron at the time.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good thing you didn't make love to him.
Yeah.
Lee Stubbs, I love to hate him on Nashville. How did you feel about getting killed off?
I didn't like it, but it was a necessity. I was lucky enough to be having to do another show. So they literally had to kill me off. They had no choice.
Christine, who was your favorite actor to work on Scream Queens?
I'm going to say Glenn Powell. It's my boy.
Glenn Powell.
I love Glenn.
Good dude.
Man. He's a good
dude. Danny,
man.
Oliver's work in lots of genres, drama, comedy, horror, documentary. Does he have a favorite type of role?
Probably comedy, dark. Oh, I like dark comedy.
Angel Harrington, I love the podcast you're doing with your sister. Any chance you'll work together in acting projects sometime soon?
Yeah, it'll happen.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Matthew Jasso, Snake Plissken or Jack Burton?
Jack Burton. Oh, by the way, that's the other one. Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of my favorites that Kurt has done. I mean... That movie, well, it's another John Carpenter movie, you know, anything John Carpenter does.
You know, I heard something where it was like Kurt Russell was, they were considering, well, they had I don't know if they have a table, I don't know if this is true, table read or something for Escape from New York. And they're like, it's just that we got to change it. We got to make it more likable.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I'm likable.
Right.
I'm Kurt Russell.
Right.
Don't worry. I'm like, there's something true about that though.
Oh, hell
yeah. If you're likable. You can make anything.
Yeah. I mean, look at Danny McBride, right?
Oh, I love him in everything. He's a horror show.
He's despicable. Yeah. I mean, he's despicable. In Eastbound and Down, he's a despicable human, but I'm rooting for him every single time. And that's just because that's his nature. You
Mary
know?
Brock up. I'm sure you'll talk about what it was like growing up with Goldie Hawn. We did this, right? Home to Mac. I'm wondering about the series splitting up together as a husband and father himself. What did he think about the family dynamics in the series at all? Realistic?
Yeah, that's why I loved it. I mean, it was my favorite thing that I've done because it actually touched upon something real, something that people were going through. When I was doing press and stuff and around after the show aired, even people come up to me like, I'm going through this, or I have friends who are doing this. So it was, you know, that's real. I liked it for that reason, actually.
Jill Eckhart, does he get free Fabletics gear? So you and your sister did an athletic company,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hers. It's hers. It's hers.
Right.
But yes, I do get
Is
free.
Is it good stuff?
Yeah, it's good. It's good. They,
good
have, a
dude
men,
stuff?
They have a men's line. They just launched a men's line.
Would I look good in Fabletics?
Yeah. Do you work out?
Flabletics. Karen Bennett thinking back to childhood.
Spade joke. Flabletics.
It really was. What were some of your best memories of your family? I mean, probably going to Colorado is what you said, right? What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my fam, we're a tight family. Very close. We all live within 10 minutes from each other still.
Well, I'm glad. Thanks for allowing me to be inside of you today.
Yeah, dude.
Really.
You felt good.
It did. It felt really good. Yeah, it felt good. Natural.
Yeah. Really natural. It was awesome.
Maybe I'll ask him off. But if I gave you a poster to get signed, you'd do it, right?
Yeah, of course.
Like dude. If I say, hey, can you sign this fucking, like, the thing poster? For
Yeah. That's easy.
How many friends of you have done that?
Zero.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Then they're fucking pretend time.
Yeah. Dude, 100%. That's so
easy. So
no
one's ever done it, so it's really not an imposition.
Give me fucking 10 per posters.
Well, I probably, now that you said that, I'll probably get, you know.
Seriously, get whatever ones that you want. And
they don't care.
They don't, my dad doesn't give a fuck.
So, yeah, it's one of my good friends. Michael, the Bone Tomahawk guy. All right. I might have him sign the Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah.
What a great movie, Ryan. You got to watch it. Dude, this has been great. I hope you'll have me on your show.
100%.
My brother will come on. Sibling revelry. And what else is going on? What's your I know you're not on Twitter.
Not on Twitter, I'm on Instagram.
Instagram, what's your handle?
The Oliver Hudson.
And sibling revelry is
at sibling revelry. Yeah.
Listen to his pocket. Listen how open it was and how much fun. And guys, if you like someone like I like, I mean, look, this is obviously you're gonna love this. So give that a shot and subscribe to his show. And
thank
Kate,
you, man.
She's lovely.
You come on with your brother, it'll be good.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, we'll fuck with your brother a little bit.
Oh, Jesus. All right, love you, buddy. Thanks.
Love you too, man.
I loved it. What do you think? What was your favorite thing about Oliver Hudson?
Favorite thing about Oliver Hudson?
I mean, listening to him about that.
He was really fun. It was fun to talk. I didn't talk at all. It was fun to listen to.
Yeah.
I was cutting it. I was like, there was no break.
Yeah.
It was constant. Like, it was like an hour and a half. It's going to be shorter, but you know.
Yeah, and you listen. You have to listen because you edit, because you have to make it tight and get all the air out and all that bullshit. So you really listen to all the episodes. If it's one person who really listens, it's you.
There was no air. I was trying to find, because normally like I find like a halfway point, like, okay, this is where the conversation shifts. It just went.
Very fluid.
Very, very fluid.
Very fluid. So again, guys, thank you. If you like this podcast, many more great ones to come. You could also revisit the old ones. Make sure you subscribe. It's enormously helpful. There's some big news coming up. When I can announce it, I will. We're going to be Rob Danson and I. We do. He's a guitarist from Left on Laurel. He and I are doing an album together. We do stages once a month. So look on my Instagram and all that stuff. There's great prizes and Zooms and all that. And of course, Patreon. Thank you to all my patrons out there who make this show possible. Couldn't do it without you. The stage at winners, Vicky Garcia, Lisa Jordan. Thank you. We play covers. We play originals. We play a couple of Left on Laurel songs. Oh, and I'm doing the virtual. Thank you for coming to the, we did a fan expo virtual thing where fans can Zoom me and there's one coming up. Make sure you're looking on my Instagram and all that, because Tom Welling and I are going to be doing some duo Zooms and more of these virtual conventions, which are interesting. And, you know, when you do a Zoom with me, it's always like, well, they say they're 2 minutes, but I always press an extra. There's a button you could press extra 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm already giving people twice their time half the time. And they're like, can we go to the next one? I'm like, no, I'm not done talking to John here. So thank you again for listening. Thank you to everyone out there. And, you know, I'm going to go ahead and read off the patrons, which I always do. Is there any way to make this interesting? Maybe we can come up with some interesting Patreon music, like a little guitar riff after this, where we could play something and add it to this.
Sure.
Here are the patron shout outs. Couldn't do it without you. Nancy D, Mary B, Leah S, Trisha F, Sarah V, Little Lisa, Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Lauren G, Nico P, Barry I, Argentina. Wow, my contacts are bad. Angelina G, Robin S, Jerry W, Kevin R, Emily K, Bob B, Robert B, Jason W, Stephen J, Kristen K, Amelia O, Allison L, Tom N, Jess N, Lucas M, Raj, Joshua D, Emily S, CJP, Samantha M, Hamza B, Jennifer N, Stacy B, Carly T, Reem, Jennifer S, Janelle B, Tabitha 272, Kimberly E, Melissa C, Mike E, Marissa N, Judith D, Ramira Beth B, Chris F, Sarah F, Chad W, Leanne P, Jackie P, Rodrigo S, Ration, Ray A, Maya P, Megan D, Jennifer C, Maddie S, Tiffany I, Kendrick F, Ashley E, Margie M, Sigourney P, Thomas T, Matt W, Belinda N, we're almost done, Benjamin R, Lisa J, Kevin V, Robert S, Joy W. Thanks, everyone out there. This has been a joy to do. I want to keep doing this podcast. I do my best. I call every guest. I get every guest. Hopefully, I'm going to get some help in a little while, in a little bit, to help me get more guests. But when people say, can you get so-and-so on? Well, I have to know them or know someone, or I do my best. I've called agents. I've done that thing. And I'm like, oh, my God, here I am. I'm that guy. Hey. You know, and then sometimes calling guests, like I was calling Jensen Ackles again. I'm Jensen. Hey. Dude, it's Rosie again. Hey. And then he emails me. I was like, dude, I'm so sorry, blah, blah. And I thought, you know, I was like, he's probably annoyed. He's probably like, fuck off. I think I just emailed Karen Gillan again. You know, she's probably like, oh God. It's like, shut the fuck up. You know, but like, I got to try. I love doing this and it helps people and I'm going to fucking keep doing it. Sorry for the F-bombs. Ryan, anything you got going on?
No.
Well, you know, I'm glad you're doing this. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you for allowing me to be inside each and every one of you. Till next time, you know, just take care of yourself. Do the best you can. Wear a mask. Be respectful.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone's senior writer, Brian Hyatt.
Now, here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band, like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.